Hello and welcome to episode number 19 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I'm Robert Rosenthal, back in town.
Great to see you back and recovered from your week of grandparenting, parenting as a grandparent.
I give myself an A minus. I really knocked it out. I did really, really well.
That's the difference between you and me. If I say I gave myself an A minus, I'm really upset about whatever it was.
That made it a minus instead of just an A?
Yes.
Yes.
And you're just pleased to get there with an A minus.
Yeah, I was good. It was really, really fun. I have a new appreciation for parents with two toddlers at home of what it's like, of how much you have to stay on guard of, like, is he about to go up the stairs and is she about to fall off the couch? And, you know, I haven't had that level of awareness in a while of, like, okay. But remember, I started parenting at 8, 10, and 12, so I've never had these days. This was quite the experience for me.
Well, we've learned that you being away and missing a couple of basketball games does not affect a winning streak.
Yes. Tyler covered the last three games for the site, and they went 3-0, including a win at Nebraska. So if we lose Saturday and I'm the one there, then it's pretty much me, right?
Obviously, you have that kind of power.
Yes, yes. Make it about me. Get in there and make it about yourself.
We're going to talk about that, and also some football news as Brett Bielema met with the media this week to discuss the second signing day, but also to discuss the openings on his staff that he is going to fill sooner than later. And then I've been looking forward to this. The head coach of Illinois baseball, Dan Hartlib, he'll enter his 21st season a week from today. He'll be traveling to Tampa, Florida to get ready for the season opener. And it's his 36th season overall with the program, counting his years as an assistant. He's one of the longest tenured head coaches and one of the best.
And it's your sport. You're a baseball guy, so this is good for you.
Yeah, it's my one of the 17.
Yes, 100%.
Kind of vibe.
Yes.
For those of you who don't know or maybe aren't familiar with Robert's thing, you've called yourself one of the 17.
Yes.
Because you've always been the most passionate about football.
I'm simply one of the 17 Illini fans that cares more about football than basketball.
With the recent success of football, I don't know that it's quite the same vibe anymore.
I'm one of the 17,000 Illini fans who cares more about football than basketball.
But honestly, the way basketball's going right now on the men's side, woo! So we will talk about that. But before we get going, please, if you would take a moment to like and subscribe, we really do appreciate that. And now, the only thing that's left to do, Robert, since you're back.
I don't see the remote anywhere near me, so I think you're taunting me in some way. Are you holding it over my head?
Oh, you mean now that you're back, you just assumed that you would have control of the remote and you would get to light the eye.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know why. You just always assumed that. You never considered my feelings in this whole matter, did you?
I think it's an ownership thing.
So
it's my toy. I'm going to act like my 3.5-year-old granddaughter.
But I felt like
he can't play with that. It's mine.
Once we launched this was a partnership. What's yours is mine. What's mine is yours. Is that not true?
Do you see me getting twitchy over here, like ready to reach
Yes. It's like who gets to push the button in the elevator?
That's right.
A kid.
That's right.
With you. But I guess.
Are we doing a presentation here? Are you handing it off?
I just wanted you to know that I am being the better man here. I'm not holding on. This is the one who is willing to give this up is the true owner.
You're Sam. Like, what if the ring were mine?
My precious. Okay. All right.
Thank you. It is
time
to.
Go ahead, you sicko. Light the eye.
Light the eye.
Twelve wins in a row for Illinois men's basketball. Tell me you're not superstitious.
I'm a little stitious.
Thank you, Michael Scott.
Mm-hmm.
No, is there anything that you're not changing here in this whole?
No.
And actually, I'd be curious to know if there's anybody that is.
I'm sure there are people out there.
Let us know in the comments.
I have only watched in one chair in the basement. I haven't watched any of these games. I'm sure there are those people out there. For me, like, I had a thing in the 2021 season where I noticed that when I wore a certain pair of socks, we won. And then I wore then I didn't have the Sox with me when we played. Let's see, we lost back-to-back games to Ohio State and Maryland, and then I wore the Sox again, and we won, and I kept wearing the Sox, and they won like 7 in a row. So I had this thing that season of like, I'm pretty sure it's the Sox. Then I forgot to bring them to Michigan State that year, and that was the one game they lost out of 15. So it was obviously the Sox, and I wore them the rest of the year. But let's not talk about the fact that I was wearing the Sox during the Loyola game. So it was obviously not the Sox. So yes, that I had that experience of like, ooh,
when or I that just these the Sox's power
yes.
was limited
yes.
against Loyola.
Since then, I have not had any superstitions toward I'll wear this, I'll take this, anything like that. So I'm just enjoying the ride.
Yeah. Well, I'll be curious if there's anybody that's not mixing up anything right now while this winning streak is going on. And let's start right there. For whatever reason, Northwestern has been either could not beat them or it's a close, tough game up in their place. But similar to what happened a couple of years ago, the Terrence Shannon suspension year, Illinois absolutely throttled Northwestern for a 40-point win. There was at one point we were checking on Press Row, what's the largest margin of victory for Illinois in a Big Ten game? It's 47, by the way, against Ohio State in 1956. And the largest margin of victory against Northwestern ever was 42. I don't know what year that was off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's the kind of game. It's like, well, we better start looking. And the 3 record was in jeopardy, which Illinois has already matched this year. And the Purdue game with 18, they made 17. That's 3 times now this year that Illinois has hit 17 threes in a game. And it wasn't one guy went off. There was like 5 guys that made 3 threes at least in the ball game. It was a I want you to understand something. Northwestern's in the Big Ten.
Yes. Yes.
And by the way, so is Rutgers and so is Minnesota, some teams that Illinois has, especially in the first half.
Yeah.
Just like we have no interest in letting you score.
Right, right. It is a like I was on a flight during the game, okay? So I was changing planes in O'Hare and then flying to Champaign. So it was one of those get up in the air, it's a short half hour flight, you back down, you see that the score is insane at halftime. So I did some digging later on when I got home of like, man, what was this run overall? Because it was a decently close game when I took off in Chicago, and then it's suddenly, 47-19? I think it was 44-19 just before the half when I checked the score. But so I looked it up. The score was 7-5 Northwestern. And then later, once I actually got home from the airport, I turned on the TV, and it was, let me see if I get this right, 79-30. So that would be a, if it was 7-5, that would be a 74-23 run. 74-23, 51 points better over that span. That's about as good of basketball or as about a big of a drubbing as you can see. That is insane. A 79-30 is an insane score to look at the TV and see. It's crazy.
I mean, they just took the spirit out of Northwestern. Northwestern couldn't get anything going, especially with Nick Martinelli. Brad Underwood talked about what are we when shots aren't going in? The shots were going in, great, but he loved how they were defending.
Yep,
and that's what's going to carry you.
Yeah, that's been the question. I got KenPom open right now. Let me see what the numbers are as of this moment. Number 1 offense, number 19 defense. So that has been the
thing. I could have told you that because I already had it printed out on my sheet.
Got it. Well, it updates every 10 minutes. So if there's some early game on the East Coast
on a
that
Thursday
changes Penn State's strength of schedule, which changes the strength of the margin when Illinois played Penn State and everything. It's constantly, KenPom is a living document.
I'm just saying some of us do prep.
Yes. Yes. But looking at that, the thing that people have discussed.
And KenPom's a living document.
Yes. When you look at these.
It's a website. It's not a document.
Yes. When these, it's an organism. It exists here on my screen.
It's like the Constitution.
Yes.
It can be amended.
That's right. That's right.
By the people.
Signed at the bottom. It's the defensive number has been the issue of people talk about if you look over the years, every national champion had a defensive number of at least this on KenPom. If Illinois' number is above that, then that's maybe this signal that at some point the defense will let them down in the tournament or whatever. So as that defensive number has slowly crept down, it's been fascinating to watch. Now, part of when people say that on KenPom is those are the final numbers after the tournament that, you know, people always say like, well, this team never had this number. And so if their defense is that bad, they're not going to win the title. Well, that team probably had a much higher number and then played six really great defensive games because they won the national title. And then their number dropped and dropped and dropped, and their final number was that. So Illinois is in that range of having the efficiency numbers to not only get to the Final Four, but win a title. Like, that's the conversation now. Illinois is one of five teams that could win a title. You and I were talking earlier. I was looking up the odds. They're, you know, one draft, you know, one of the odds makers has Illinois the fifth most likely national champion. Another one has them sixth. One of them has them fourth. Like, that's the conversation now. You win these 12 games in a row, you're up to five in KenPom. The conversation is, can this team actually win it all? That's what we're talking about.
And it's, yeah, it's not fantasy. We've talked about that a couple of times.
Yes, it's not some fan saying, but if this team gets hot, they could really, it's the every stat says it, the 12-game winning streak says it, the wins at Purdue and Nebraska say it. It's reality.
So what I remember, I also, one of the things I remember about the 1920 season, that was the year COVID cut things short. And
to be clear, you're saying the 2019-2020 season, not 1920.
No,
with set shots and in Huff Hall.
No,
oh, Huff Hall wasn't even
probably
open.
Kenny
yet.
Jim.
Kenny Jim. Yes.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about 2019 to 2020 that was cut short by COVID.
Yep.
And the legend of that team only grew because last game of the year against Iowa, you secure a bid, not a bid, a double bye.
Yes.
In the Big Ten tournament, fourth place, right?
Yep.
And then you go over to Indianapolis, and they had the practice of their lives, and they were just as gelling as well as ever, and then things got cut short. And so then the fish can only get bigger. Well, that team was going to make some noise in the tournament, too. That was a second weekend team, and like, after the right path, with the way they were playing, I could see them making them. You know, it just kept growing and growing.
Yes.
To all of a sudden, it was a Final Four team, and it was like, wait a minute.
Yep.
I can't say you're wrong, but hi. This you could sit here and look at numbers-wise.
Yes.
The consistency with which they're playing. You can think about that.
Yes. And this is why I'm a
KenPom. I wouldn't say expected because it's a tournament.
Yes.
That's different.
This is why I'm a KenPom guy, because you can go to the efficiency numbers and talk about it. So I just pulled up, you know, on this living document over here, I just pulled up the 2020
season. Are we
going to,
like, put Ken Pomeroy himself into a glass case?
Why don't we put Ken Pomeroy himself into that chair and to talk about all this stuff?
Here we go, Ken.
Call me.
All right.
That team finished 30th, I think, the 2020 season that was cut short by COVID. That team finished 30th in KenPom. The number 38 offense, the number 35 defense. Those are numbers of, it is very rare for a team to get past the Sweet 16 with those efficiency numbers.
I told you they can make some noise in that tournament.
Yes, that's the thing. Is like, back then, you could have maybe said that if a team had, you know, like there was a Illinois team, I think it was 2002, maybe 2004, I can't remember. Oh, it was the 03 season. You know, Illinois had the fifth best KenPom profile, and that's the 03 season lost to Notre Dame in the round of 32. That was a team built for a deep run and just got ran up against a three-point shooter who was super, super hot. But this, you know, when you talk about the 03 season, did that team have potential? Absolutely, the numbers said it. 2020, probably not. Would have to be lucky to maybe make the Sweet 16. 2026? Every single number says that this is a top five team in the country. And, you know, if the 20-3 record didn't tell you, all the metrics say the same thing, that this is a team that could get to the Final Four.
By the way, their net ranking right now has them at number four.
Yeah. Yeah.
So theoretically, that means the committee looks at them as we've talked about this. It's not quite just the top four teams are the number one seeds. It's not quite that way.
They use that number to see who you've beat. But on that side of things, wins over, you know, road wins at Purdue a win over Tennessee in Nashville, a win over Missouri and St. Louis where you blow them out. These other things all factor together with this, 11-1 in the Big Ten now? And
yeah, by the way, 11 wins means a winning season in the Big Ten for the seventh straight year.
Yes.
It means if you have sat yourself down for the last six seasons in the same spot with the same socks.
Same hole in those same socks.
And you do so for the rest of this season, you will have seen more wins in Big Ten play than you will have losses.
Yes. And maybe let's right now go through. So 11-1 in the Big Ten now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here is number of Big Ten wins starting in 2007. Okay. So 05, we know that team, 15-1 of the Big Ten, you know, all the way to the national title game.
Wait a minute. Did you just preface something you're going to say by saying, well, first I need to give you context with 07, but first I need to give you context with 05.
People appreciate the fact that I double context everything.
You're now doing tertiary context.
I'm going to get tertiary context as my license plate.
Does everybody just remember that Illinois was super good in 2005?
Yes.
Okay.
And 06, 11-5, D. Brown's still around, James Augustine's still around, still a good team. 07, very last team in the tournament, sweating on Selection Sunday. You saw the team celebrate when they got in. So that 07 team was 9-7 in the Big Ten. Okay. Here's the total Big Ten wins over the season. 07, 9, then 5, 11 in the 2009 season, then 10, 9, 6, 8, 7, 9, 5, 8, 4, 7. That's the run of seasons that you can't even get to 10 wins.
Okay, the season was shorter for many of those. When did...
I mean, it went from 18 to 20, but... Still,
no, 16 was what you started with there in 07.
Yes. The first year I'm talking about, 09 is when they went to 18 games.
Okay.
Yes.
So they were 500. They went 9-9 that first year.
Yes. Yes. So 9, 6, 8, 7, 9, 5, 8, 4, 7. And then
Janny,
the corner is turned and we are at 13, 16, 15, 11, 14. 12, and as of right now, 11, on the way to 17, 18?
Well.
It's an incredible turnaround. Like, when you look at the context of this Big Ten win total would have been the best season between 2007 and 2019, and there's still eight games left.
And just to take this for what you will.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there are two quad two games left and two quad three games. Those are the last two games of the year as things stack up right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you would already think, based
that's
on this team's
15 wins.
That's 15.
Yep.
And then you have four quad one wins at Michigan State, at Southern California, at UCLA, and home against Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Let's...
Just 2-2 in those games is 17-3. 3-1 of those games is 18-2 in the Big Ten.
That's why Illinois is in the driver's seat for a Big Ten title.
Yep.
Now, Michigan plays tonight.
Mm-hmm.
May have already played by the time you're consuming this, and they're hosting Penn State. So they're going to be heavily favored to be in a tie for 11-1.
Yep.
And then Michigan State lost. They stormed the court up in Minneapolis for the third time this year.
Good for them. They've had a rough, rough go of it. Beat a top 10 team. Absolutely, kids. Get out there on that court.
Yeah. But they've
done
it.
Did you see the baby shot? The guy holding the baby up on the court?
That's hilarious. I didn't see that.
Yes, like Simba.
The other thing about the game is Jeremiah Fears was called for a flagrant foul. It's made its rounds in social media. He kicked a guy in the groin.
Yep.
And Tom Izzo said, I may not start him. I don't know if he was blowing smoke, if he's going to have a little talk with him and then say, we've come to an understanding and I'm going to actually start you against, you know, a yep. top five team in the country. Turns out I need you or
maybe
I don't know.
Sit him for 4 minutes and then.
Yeah, first time out, he's in, something like that. But all that to say, I don't think it's a cakewalk with or without Jeremiah Fierce.
Absolutely. So absolutely. Yes.
It's a huge game. Yes. And this on paper is the second biggest game left.
Yes. This one and Michigan.
Yep.
Yep. Are the two and this most is, difficult. Yes.
Anything can happen, but this one and those two seem to be what's remaining between Illinois and a title.
Yep, definitely. And let's note what Michigan has left. So Illinois and Michigan tied at the top. Well, after Michigan beats Penn State tonight, I'm trying to jinx them. They still have Duke, which is a non-conference game. But if we're talking about like fighting for that one seed, this matters. They still have Duke on a neutral site. They still have to go to Purdue. They have to still go to Iowa. They have to still go to Illinois. They have to come here. They still have Michigan State at home, and they still have to go to Ohio State, which may be a, something you would assume Michigan to win, but if you know people from Ohio State, they want to win one game a year. So they will be up, up, up for having a top five Michigan team in their arena. So Michigan does have a tougher path here. They're higher on, you know, the metrics. They're higher in the polls. They have a better record. But they, you know, could a Michigan team go into Iowa and Iowa's really hot and lose that game? Yeah, I really think they could. So we will see. It'll be interesting.
7 o'clock tip on Saturday night for Illinois men's basketball in the Breslin Center in the Zone.
I'll be there.
Spartans.
Taking the train. Choo-choo.
I'll be taking the plane.
This is my
faster.
This is my favorite trip because I do the carless. I don't do a rental car. Because I can walk from the train station to the hotel and then walk from the hotel to Breslin, back to Breslin, back to the train station, back to Champaign. Love it.
You're a weird dude, Ace.
I love it.
Okay. Moment to mention Illinois women's basketball. They lost to Oregon, so they split their Northwest trip. They lost by a bucket. However, they were down 20-plus points at half. They came back and took a lead.
And a decent lead, right? It was like 6 or 8 or something like that?
I was only watching out of the corner. No, I don't remember.
Okay. Well, it's fine. It's fine. We can put bad information out there.
Well, let's just tell you that they took a lead.
Yep.
And then Oregon took it back.
Yeah.
And we it was back and forth towards the end.
Yeah.
Valiant effort to be commended. You obviously don't want to dig yourself that kind of hole. I just continue to see a pattern where Shauna Green teams don't get blown out.
Yep. Yep. And this is the streakiness you're going to see from a younger team.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to see like that, what happened in that first half and then
but
third
you go
quarter.
To Seattle and you beat a ranked team and start your road trip off of the win. You're going to be out there a couple of days. You come to your second game and you could just roll over. Oh, we're down 20. Mm-hmm. Guess it's not going to be our night. Let's just get this thing over with, get on the plane and come home, live for another day. No, we're going to fight.
Yep.
Now, there's got to be a point where you say, okay, cool, great effort. Mm-hmm. That's not quite what we're aiming for here. Like, we need to win that game.
Yep.
But I just want to point out that that still happened that way. And Gretchen Dolan was out for the game. So that continues to be an up and down situation.
I mean, it's kind of similar to early seasons for Bielma, where, yeah, you're not winning, but there was a lot of conversation of like, man, gosh, even though when they went down in that game, they came all the way back and made a game of it. You know, like, this team has the potential to really fight if they stay together and this and that, versus so many former seasons where it just fell apart and stayed falling apart. So, yeah, there's still tons of potential. There's no seniors on this women's team. It's all headed somewhere, and it's disappointing when you have a night like last night, but good things are ahead.
Okay, and then football. Brett Bielma met with media yesterday. Obviously, you were traveling, and I was doing a pregame show, so neither one of us got to sit there in person. Mm-hmm. But learned some big things. A headline takeaway, new defensive scheme coming. Sounds like Brett Bielma knows what he wants to do in bringing in a new defensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
But he's waiting until after the Super Bowl, which is this weekend, because the NFL hiring cycle and all that starts. So does that make you giddy?
It makes me, you know what I'll do? I'm gonna turn to the camera. I'm going to look in the camera. Look at me. Look at me looking into the camera. Here we go. For those people who have been nervous about the coordinator, who are nervous about the defensive line recruiting, I have some words for you. Stop it. Get some help.
Like Michael Jordan PSA?
Yes, yes.
Stop.
Get some help. Like, listen, if there's ever been an Illinois coach that has earned trust to be like, hey, I'm going to pivot here. I'm going to do something a little different. I'm going to be a younger team. We're going to develop. This is the time to make some changes. We're going to do this with the defense. If there's ever been a coach to trust and just say, you know what, coach, you kind of have earned my trust. I'm gonna trust that you're going to figure this out.
How are you going to trust a guy that just won 19 games
yes,
for 2 years?
Exactly. How are you going to trust the guy who has completely turned around Illinois football to what I've personally been waiting for it to become for 35 years of going to game after game after game and tailgating for 2-10 seasons and everything else? How can you not, after what we've seen the last 5 years, say, hey, if that's what he sees is needed here, I'm in. Like, that's fine. I'm good with that. Like, all of this that developed in the fan base over the years of, like, you know what? I feel like we're responsible for raising these concerns. And let's get really loud about the fact that special teams are bad. And let's get, like, that. It's really hard for some of these people to just say, you know what? I think I'm just going to trust that we're in good hands. And if he says a pivot on the defense is necessary, then I'm good with that. Now, look, I understand that's not very helpful for sitting around the barroom conversations for the Monday morning water cooler for all these other moments, but I feel like we're in this moment of, I'm relieved to no longer have to worry, right? I'm relieved to not have to sit there and say, oh my gosh, is the defense going to fall apart? What will we do? We might be so young. What if we start two sophomore linebackers? What if the one on the freshman? What if we're starting a bunch of the true freshmen? I can leave all of that behind finally and say, okay, there seems to be a plan here. There was a plan at the beginning of the 2023 season to get this team to where it was in 2024 and 2025. And people were mad during 2023 and, oh, this is so bad. And it was like, this is the transition from A to B and we're really going to be something. So if next year's a transition season, I'm good with that. If any of this is getting to a point where people are frustrated and, oh, I don't know about this. Oh, I think that's a bad decision. I think we can just let it be at this point and trust that there's a head coach here who understands. And if he thinks the defense needs to pivot, I'm going to trust that the defense needs to pivot. It's much easier to be a fan that way than to be like, oh, I think I need to bring it up because what if we don't have to do that. And that's such a relief. And it's what I've been waiting to do as a fan for 35 years. End of rant.
But I have a tangential.
Hit me.
Listen to Brad Underwood's post-game comments from last night.
Mm-hmm.
Talked about his willingness to change the defense this year, mid-year.
Mm-hmm.
They made switches after the last Nebraska game. And one of the things, willing to give up more threes.
Yes.
And he said, he admitted, I needed to be willing to listen to, he brought in Cam Crocker. I need to be willing to listen to that. They have changed some things even since then. What's the number one narrative you hear about Brad Underwood? Doesn't make adjustments. Well, it's just false.
Yep. 100% false. People
almost
will still send it to me over and over. We're a top 10 program in the 2020s. I would argue close to the top five program in the nation in the 2020s, and people are still like, oh, I don't know, but here's my stance on the coach. It has to be exhausting to fan that way, because we are in the golden years here and I'm enjoying every ounce of it.
Yeah. I'm not smart enough to know the ins and outs of in-game tactics.
Mm-hmm.
Every coach will look back and say, oh, I should have done that, maybe, especially mm-hmm. I mean, especially if they lose. But it just on the whole, I don't think Brett Bielema or Brad Underwood dig their heels in so hard to say, I'm not doing it that way ever.
Yeah, and I don't think...
I'd rather win, actually.
I don't think Shauna Green does that either. And if you put run that thread together, these are the things that I think Josh Whitman is kind of looking for when he's out there hiring. Is that kind of willingness to adjust, that level of confidence plus humility of, hey, I really know that we're going to be a good team, and also I need to listen to my assistants and make some adjustments. We have seen Illini coaches in the past highly, highly unwilling to change. And so it's such a relief to see the approach of, you know, most of the coaches these days as to how they approach all these moments.
You know who one of those is?
Who is that?
That'd be Dan Hartlib.
Well, that's a great segue. Should we go maybe talk to him?
We should.
Okay, let's do it.
He's a man who has not changed in some of what he holds to and values. But as the game changes and as college athletics evolves, he rolls with that.
Good segue. I say we should go to the next segment and talk to Coach Hartlib.
Can't wait. It's almost baseball season. Dan Hartlib with us in a moment on Light the Eye.
I want to say a big thank you to our title sponsor, our presenting sponsor for the podcast, U of I Community Credit Union. Again, I say this all the time. When I reach into the wallet and pull out this, it's fun to have a block eye on my card. Just so you know, this is a dummy card. Those of you trying to read the numbers and go steal all of my money, you can't do it. There are no numbers on this card. I'm not going to be that guy holding up the actual card. But please note that it is really fun if I'm in a different city to have a card like this in my wallet, because look, everything I wear is Illini. Every hat I have is Illini. Everything else is Illini. And they are Illini. And that's why they're the presenting sponsor of this podcast. So thank you to them. And now let's get to our conversation with Coach Hartlib.
Thanks for being with us on Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. So pleased for our next guest. Personally, I've been looking forward to this. He's the head coach of Illinois baseball, entering his 21st season. And the season begins next weekend in Florida. Please welcome Dan Hartlib. Coach, thank you for being here. Welcome to Light the Eye.
Well, I'm looking forward to the next number of minutes and see if we can enlighten everybody on Illinois baseball.
This has a few more bells and whistles to it than a pregame interview in a dugout that we do during the season. So
yeah, a little cleaner, obviously.
Better lighting.
Better lighting. Music's a little lower, so all good.
Welcome into the Armory, too. We had Lauren Tatum here a few episodes ago, and he remembered practicing baseball in the Armory. And you've been here long enough. Now some of the – well, of course, the fantastic indoor facility right next to the ball field that you have, but then some of it happens in the indoor football place. But what happened before that?
Well, when I first got here to Illinois, I think a few years prior to that, they had gotten out of the Armory. The guys actually my age that played here practice in the Armory, but we had the bubble. And and that was interesting.
Over the turf at Memorial Stadium.
Yep. It was over the turf. You'd walk in, and there was static everywhere, and you touch anybody or get close to somebody, you'd get shocked. They had lights that basically hooked to the wall, and it projected the light up to the top of the bubble. I think we broke one of those a time or two. We had a few stand-up cages in there. Very, very difficult to see because the bubble was white and the baseball was white. But we got our jobs done in there. The turf, too, was hard. It was really hard. You know, today we have the rubber infill, and back then it was it wasn't the real thin carpet, but it had a very hard pad that was about an inch, and if you fell, it would take every bit of skin off of your arms or your leg, whatever was bare.
The doors to the bubble were great, too, because of the suction required, like the airflow required to keep it inflated. I think they had like two doors, right? There was like a little vestibule that you had to go into first, but you'd open that door and it would be...
Yeah, you had three different options. The option you were supposed to take were the revolving doors, as you're talking about, to keep the air pressure in. Right next to that, there were emergency exits, and sometimes if you needed to get something larger in, you would hit that, and you'd have to fight the wind.
Yep.
And then you had the big garage door down at the end, and it had a garage door in the interior and the exterior, and so it was like a... you know, kind of like an air trap or air bubble in the middle, and you were supposed to use it that way, and occasionally somebody would open both of them, and then it was, you know.
It's like being on the moon, right? Like you go into a little thing, and they repressurize you, and then you walk out the next door.
Yeah, Star Trek movie is what it was.
I played in a intramural flag football tournament in the bubble. Like, they used to let intramurals into the bubble in the winter. So
I remember.
Those were the days.
Well, one of the things that's really interesting about that, too, if you would have gone back a couple weeks when we got the 6 or 7 inches of snow, they would have had to have some of the workers grab the guide wires, walk to the top, and push the snow off. When they push it off, then it would get trapped between the bubble and the retaining wall, and they'd have to shovel it out. So it was difficult during the really poor weather. And then it was not warm in there.
Yes.
It was cold.
Yes.
Well, the southern teams always supposedly have this off-season advantage with the weather, but it got cold down south. So maybe you look at the weather map from time to time and go, ha!
Oh, absolutely. So I sent a text to Tom Walter, which is Wake Forest head coach. He's one of my good friends. And they had some social media pictures and some video of them. They had tractors out there and trucks getting the snow off the field. And I texted him. I said, "Welcome to my world." He said, "Yeah, I'm going back to my George Washington days." And then I commented and I said, "All these Southern coaches are in a panic right now." And he and I were laughing, and we exchanged some more comments about that. So it is interesting and kind of funny that they're going through that.
Yeah.
Well, since the season is upon us, with snow or not, just how's the off season been? And what are the feelings for you? Are they any different than any other time of any other season when about a week out that you have as a head coach?
No, I mean, the off season's been good. You know, if you look from a personal standpoint, got away a little bit, which was nice. You know, last year was a tough year for a number of reasons with, you know, it's actually the anniversary of Mark Allen passing today. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was something that was very difficult. And then, you know, 12 days later, my mentor, Rich Jones, passed. And so we get through all those things last year. You know, our staff did a really, really good job in the portal, recruiting, number of different things. And then we get through fall practice, and then Gene and I and the kids got to get away, you know, for a little bit, which was really, really nice. And so recharged and ready to go. And anything different? Not really. You know, you have new players and you have new challenges. The thing, you know, I get the question all the time, when are you going to be done? And I don't know that answer, but what I can tell you is, and I told Gina, is I still get mad on a regular basis, which means I still care, still have energy, still love what I do, and, you know, in really, really good health. And so, you know, this is another year. You just keep tacking it on, and we're going to do the best job we can to go out and win at a high level.
You mentioned Mark Allen, and for those who don't know, he's a former pitching coach here and passed away from cancer a year ago today. We're recording this on the 5th, and you know, that was hard for a lot of people, obviously for you. You work so close with him. I got to know him a bit personally, and it was hard for everybody, the players. Talk about that in a moment, but ultimately a new pitching coach now, Dylan Napoleon. What did you go out to look for when you found Dylan?
Well, the first piece of that is, you know, our department did a great job for a year and a half or 2 years as Mark went through the fight of cancer or against cancer. And they allowed us to bring in temporary pitching coaches. Now, that's not ideal, but 100% the right thing to do for Mark Allen and for his family in hopes that, you know, he would have been able to beat it or have longer to live. And you know, we would have continued on, you know, with him at the helm of the pitchers. It didn't work out that way. So as we lost him last year, we had a temporary person in place, and you know, I told that person it was going to be a temporary situation. And then you know, there were a few people I had in mind, but I really wanted to watch the season last year and see who was having success, not only that year, but had sustained success in an area or for a given team or number of teams. I really didn't want to go out. I mean, it was advertised, but I didn't want it to be a free-for-all where you get 300 applicants. And I truly believe, and this may, you know, kind of be going or kind of going at things with blinders on, but I believe in many, many situations the best people are the ones not looking for a job. You know, they have good jobs, they've been successful, and you have to go find those people and try to bring one of those people into the fold. And that's what we were able to do. You know, interviewed a number of people, talked to a lot of coaches, And ultimately, you know, Dylan was a person that's name continued to come up. I've known Dylan's dad and mom and dad for a long time, and that had absolutely nothing to do with this hire. I mean, nothing at all. Matter of fact, they didn't know that he was even interviewing. We kept it very quiet. And, you know, once he accepted the job, he told him a number of hours later.
His father's a high school baseball coach in Illinois, right?
One of the most successful high school baseball coaches. He's retired now. He was at New Trier High School. I consider him, you know, one of the tops, regardless of what type of talent they had. They always had good talent, or many times they had good talent, but they won at a high level regardless. Very innovative. You know, related wealth players, a lot of things that have been passed on to Dylan. So really, really happy with the process, extremely happy with the hire, and he's done a really good job for us.
Well, I know, you know, the quality of people that you seek, but then there's the baseball part of it. And is there a part of you that, as the game has gone whatever directions, to go, yeah, I don't have to hold to this or that when it comes to, in this case, pitching?
Well, you know, the first thing you mentioned was the type of people. Culture is really, really important. It's important in the team, but it's to start with, it's almost more important in the coaching staff, because coaching staff doesn't get along and not going the same direction, it's going to be very difficult to have great culture in the locker room for the players. And so we were looking for the culture piece. And then when you go and you look at the pitching coach side of things, you need somebody that can relate to the players. You need somebody, obviously, that understands some of the mechanical type things. But one of the things that has developed here over the past 5 to 7 years is the use of analytics. And you need somebody that's extremely well-versed in analytics, understands how to read them, understands what they mean. Because it's important to help the players understand what's important and what's not important. You know, you can have great numbers from an analytics standpoint, not get anybody out. You still have to compete. And so being able to kind of merge that and bring that all together is extremely important. And, you know, Dylan has done an unbelievable job in a really short amount of time with us, you know, doing those things for us. But if you look at his history over the past probably 6 to 8 years, the things that he's been able to do at the pitching staffs and his previous stops, it's been really, really nice. And so I'm looking forward to watching our progress.
My questions for you are probably more broad-based, because I'm fascinated by baseball's specific place in the revenue-sharing world.
Here we go.
In that, yes, it's a sport where, you know, LSU is selling season tickets, and other places it's, hey, come watch college baseball. And it is basketball and football mostly that have ushered us into this era of revenue sharing. And for a sport like baseball, or say volleyball, where some people are able to charge for tickets and make some revenue and others aren't, it's a bit imbalanced now, obviously. So, big picture, I know most baseball coaches aren't probably happy with the way everything has moved, but what are your thoughts on how this has shifted toward revenue sharing and the balance across college baseball and everything else?
Yeah, I don't know if we have enough time for this. Okay.
I'll put you on the clock.
Yeah, here we go. Mm-hmm. First of all, let's talk about college athletics overall. I mean, there were some things that needed to change, and I've said from the start, you know, if you look at, first of all, the NIL piece, you know, when D. Brown was here, if we sold 100,000 jerseys, did he deserve, you know, a piece of that pie? I absolutely believe that.
Sure.
I'm not a big fan of paying players NIL money that really haven't done anything. I think we're sending the wrong message and teaching the wrong things.
Sure.
You look at the transfer portal, I have an issue with some of the things in the transfer portal. Just from a standpoint that I don't think you have the same number of student-athletes that are graduating. So that's a problem for me, because I still believe in education. Mm-hmm. You look at the revenue share piece, and it is all over the board. You have a number of schools outside the Big Ten that do have revenue share, and that's a major issue. You know, we're in a pretty good spot with our scholarship situation. And so we're getting the right people on campus for visits, but a lot of times we're losing them to scholarship plus
revenue share. Yeah.
And the plus piece is what is hurting a lot of schools. You know, the thing's interesting. You have leagues and schools that are making decisions to really invest in baseball. Some of the schools that I think are going to come out of nowhere in people's minds are schools that don't have football. Mm-hmm. So you take a Creighton, they don't have football. And so they still have the same, we'll just call it $22 million cap.
Sure.
If they want to give $5 million to baseball and $10 to basketball, I mean, they can do those things.
Yep.
And so it's going to be interesting to see who has the money and who truly invests. Not a fan of where we're at right now. I think we need some major regulation and some equity. I just don't think you should have, 10 to 15 schools that have access to championships.
Sure. Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, I'm going to use Mississippi State here just as a model. It could be anybody.
Great
I can
model.
Say these things.
Great model.
But like, Mississippi State even might be saying like, gosh, are we really going to compete in football? What if we really go all in on baseball and we sell tickets and we have season tickets and we sell out the stadium and
camp out for their tickets.
Right. So what if we just go buy everyone's good players kind of thing, which is never going to be good for any sport. And it's the fear for everywhere of, it's the discussion with basketball. It's the discussion with football and everything else. Well, what if this then becomes just go buy everyone else's good players? Football has seen two really good players go to Texas A&M because the NIL offer was bigger. So, what are your thoughts on that structure and how it's going?
Well, there is no structure, first of all.
Yes.
which again, right. It's an issue in college athletics, not just in baseball.
Yeah.
There are schools out there that are going in and they're buying the best players. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Sure.
We do need some type of regulation. I'm not sure how we get there. The two things that I think are going to, really affect college athletics, and then obviously you get the trickle-down effect, but I think there's two things you're going to see, and some of it you're starting to see. I think as you look at NIL money, some student-athletes that are getting the NIL money aren't going to understand taxes.
Yes.
Right? And so you have money that's spent and basically tax evasion, right? And so you have the government coming after young people that truly didn't understand or think that they're going to get away with it.
Absolutely.
That's number one, and this is in no order. It's 1A and 1B, point shaving. And you're starting to see that. And so if somebody comes in, let's say you have somebody comes in and here's $500,000, better not score, over 5 points the next three games.
Yep.
And they're working to get their money back. I think those are some things that are going to – or that are very real in college athletics. And I think as those things start to unfold, it's going to wake some people up and – we're going to end up, I think, with some type of regulation. I truly believe we need some contracts.
Sure.
Some contracts that can and will stick. Yep. And then here's what I've said for a number of years now. If you took Major League Baseball, the NBA, NFL, NHL, if every one of those sport groups had free agency with every player every year, they would all implode.
Right.
And so we're going down that path in college athletics, in my opinion. Did we need change? I think we need a change.
Yeah.
But the pace and the lack of rules and regulation, I think, we're all paying for it right now.
And on the opposite side of that, I mean, let's go back to 2024 for a second. Your 2024 season was like the ultimate story of what college sports is. Mm-hmm. Take Connor Milton. Okay, bit player here and there and this and that. Some kid as senior year in his hometown catches fire. You guys are suddenly winning, 18 to 21 games and this and that, and make this long run through the season and win a Big Ten title and everything else. And it was just feel good after feel good after feel good. And then we just turn around, and now all the conversations about college athletics are based in this, what's Texas A&M doing to pay all these football players, and what's this, and who's revenue share, and how is the Big East in basketball, are they going to dominate, and all this stuff. And it's tearing at the fabric, in my opinion, of what was truly drew us all to this sport and all these sports, which is those stories like what the 2024 season was.
Yeah, I agree. I think the thing that is also frustrating, if you look at our program, over time, it's been development. We've gone out, our coaches have found really good athletes, and they've developed into really good baseball players. And you're not seeing that as much anymore because, one, you're going in the portal. to fill a roster, and those guys are older and probably kind of set in what they're doing.
Sure.
The young players, a lot of them think the grass is greener. Either I didn't play as a freshman, so I'm going to go somewhere else, or, you know, I really played well my first 2 years, and, you know, somebody's offering me $20,000, which they don't understand. Sure. That's not very much money.
Right,
but,
right.
But,
and it's taxed.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. So, you know, you look at those different factors. I think a lot of the feel-good stories are going away. You know, the Cinderellas in basketball, they were gone last year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so some of those stories and some of those great memories, you know, for a lot of us, I don't know when we're going to hit those times again.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of 24, you know, for me personally, we talked about it in an early pod, just sharing some of our career memories, one of my personal highlights. And it was out there in the video at the end of the season. It was just, you said it, it's a special team. It was just a special team. And, you know, I'm wondering, when did you sense that it was unique, I guess, because the season didn't start well, record-wise. It was 6-11. And then there was this turnaround point that happened. And I was wondering, contrast that with, let's say, the 2015 team, which just rolled through the regular season. Were there hints? Basically, what I'm asking here is, on February 5th, can you tell me if we're going to have a championship season again?
Yeah, I wish I knew that. You know, it's interesting, too. The Big Ten championships I've been involved with as a head coach, we started off poor. I think that happened in, I'm going to have to say 2011. I may be wrong on the date, but 2011, same thing happened. We started out poor. We got beat in some games I thought we should never lose. And then the next thing you know, we get on a roll in the Big Ten, and we win the Big Ten. We win the Big Ten tournament. Magical year. And then you look that year in 2024, again, didn't start off great, but, you know, kind of found our little niche, and guys played well and, you know, just started winning and believing in each other. You know, those are really fun when you're not supposed to win in people's minds. And you have players that I'd say backs are against the wall, and then they come out and perform at that level. Those are fun years. Now, exactly when did I think, you know, we had an opportunity to do that? It's probably Saturday when we won the Big Ten and hit Purdue.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's so many things up there that I think the weekend before we played Iowa at home, and that was a really big weekend for us. Iowa was a really good team, and they had Brody Brecht with the first round draft pick as a pitcher or supplemental. I can't remember exactly where he's drafted, but we know we're going to face him on Saturday, and so that Friday game's so important. And it's not just the win. It's when you have teams, it doesn't matter if they're talented or not talented. It's how do they handle both failure and success. And so we were having success, and all of a sudden they look up and it's like, wow, like we're right up front. And so how do they handle it? Do they panic? Do they push all that noise aside and just play? And those guys did a great job of pushing the noise aside and just playing. And the next thing you know, we look up and, you know, pretty magical season.
I sensed a group of seniors, too, that just cared about winning. I don't know what it was, but a group of seniors that decide to go for it and all out in their last year can be a scary thing in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I've always said your most talented teams aren't the teams usually that win, right? It's you have to have talent, but it's your closest teams that care about each other and have common goals on the field and have each other's backs. Those are teams that won. I mean, you go back to 2015, we had one superstar, right?
Yeah.
And everybody else, they were solid players. And tell you what, like I've told this story before. This was really interesting to me. That team, I never had to get on them. And when I say never, never. When it came to practice and how they performed on the field. So we go through an entire fall, and when we'd go out and do team defense, do bunt defenses, whatever we were doing, conditioning, they went 100%. Now, they got off the other side of the lines and like they had fun together, and they, you know, they were goofy and funny things in the locker room. But when we got between the lines, it was really, really good. And when I say never, it was never. So we get to this time of year in the winter, and it was the same thing. They showed up in shape. We were sharp in everything we did. They knew what to do. They listened. They made adjustments. And I walked in the coaching staff and I said, hey, I'm going to come unglued today. And they're looking at me like, what are you talking about? And I said, I need to pick something and I need to get after them in practice, because if we wait 3 weeks in the season, something happens and I've never done it, they're going to think I'm panicking. I said, so I'm going to find something ticky-tacky and I'm going to go after them. So I did it. I don't even remember what it was, and I really didn't have to get after them during the season. So I may have done it one or two times the whole time. But it, you know, I think you have to get a feel for your teams. I've taken pride in at least, you know, I think having a pulse on who our guys are. It's getting a little bit more difficult now that you have, you know, we have 18 new guys this year. And that makes it a little bit difficult to get the pulse. But this group's done a really good job of, you know, coming each day with a good attitude. Well, you know, we've had a few practices that I'd like to have back that I thought we were sloppy. But sometimes, you know, those sloppy practices allow you to push them harder. And we've done that a couple times actually this week. I think we're getting cabin fever a little bit. Again, this group has done a good job. You know, they've done a lot of things that we've asked them to do, and really good personalities and seem to be really good people. Academically, they did a great job. We had a 3.49 the first semester. So a lot of really good things with this group.
You know, we know that there's, you know, living here in Champaign, there's been snow on the ground for four of the last 6 weeks, we'll say, you know, like especially the last 3 weeks, it's solid snow out there. So you can't be outdoors at all. How has the new facility helped in these moments? I mean, this is one of those winters where it's just always snow on the ground.
Well, so there's two pieces to that. Number one, the Atkins family, along with some of the other donors that, you know, helped us with the indoor facility, one of the top, if not the top facilities in the country. And so it's invaluable to us. And there's two pieces to that. Number one is you get to go in and you get to work every single day, and you know you're going to have, you know, bright, light sunshine in there.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, just a great atmosphere and everything that you need from a technology standpoint, et cetera. The piece that I think gets lost is our guys can get in there, you know, early, late. They can come in anytime during the day. And they go in there as groups, and they spend time together, and they become closer. Mm-hmm. And so there's two pieces to that facility. Now, the other thing is we have been outside, believe it or not. We'll go outside today. We were outside yesterday. Now, when I say that, we're not out there very long. So what we've been doing is we've been stretching in the indoor, and then our position players have been going out for literally 15, maybe 20 minutes, depending on wind chills. And they've been running around catching fly balls just so that we can see the ball in the air. We've been taking some ground balls. We're not throwing out there. We're going to get guys hurt. But we have gone outside to try to get through that mental piece. We'll do the same thing today. Then it's going to be, you know, just bright and sunny tomorrow and 38 degrees, which is going to feel like about 80. And
right,
so
right.
We'll be out there longer tomorrow and longer on Sunday as long as the weather holds.
Hey, I remember when I was a kid playing catch with a buddy when it was 26 degrees. That ball in that glove doesn't feel the best at 25 degrees.
Yeah. Well,
that's got to be tough out there.
That kind of brings up a subject that, all right, I admit when I saw this, I rolled my eyes, but I'm still going to ask. And the reason I rolled my eyes, and that's about moving the season back. There was a report that came out about some new momentum toward it, and I think it may have been led by Eric Backich, who's at Clemson and was at Michigan, right? Started college season back, and we had Tyra Perry on last episode too, and she advocated for this too front on the softball side. The reason I roll my eyes is I feel like I've heard this one before and then it never happens. So would you be a fan of starting the season later, and is there anything to this latest discussion that it could eventually happen?
So I am 100% a proponent. The Big Ten group and Eric kind of spearheaded this. You talked about Eric Backich, but during COVID, we weren't playing.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was home from work. And our coaches group got together and drew up some documents, did a lot of research with both the ESPN, the NCAA, Omaha, and looked at moving the season back. If we were able to move the season back, you know, what kind of academic concessions could you have maybe in the fall where guys aren't working out every single day? You know, moving it back a month allows you to prepare your pitchers better. And so we actually talked with Dr. Andrews about, you know, some of the different things from a injury standpoint, looking at better weather. So there was a really solid proposal / report that was put together that's still out there. I do think there's a little bit of momentum, and here's why I think we have a chance. we're going to go back to this whole industry that we're in right now and revenue share, and where's the money going to come from, right? And so, you know, if you look on the surface, the basically the way the lawsuit was, they said every school on average make $100 million, so the players get $22 million. And that sounds great, but that $100 million's been spent for years, right? And so where are you going to get the $122
million? Yep.
So if you move the season back, all of a sudden we can create revenue. Now, I'm not saying we can pay for our sport, but if we had everything in place with a stadium, and I don't mean just us, but if a school has a place in place stadium wise where you have some amenities, have chair backs, can truly charge kind of like a minor league type situation, all of a sudden you're offsetting costs and creating some revenue, and you're not just a black hole per se. So that's the first piece, is the money you make on campus. The bigger thing, and this is why I think we get it done. Now, I don't know if this is, it's probably not 1 year, and I don't know if it's 10 years. But the reason I think we have a chance to get it done is if you look at the networks, so just take the Big Ten network. Mm-hmm. Once you get done with baseball, softball in the regular season and then into the tournaments, it's reruns until spring ball and football. And so you have 2 months that are wide open. If we could fill 1 month of that with college baseball, college softball, all of a sudden you sell more advertisement.
Sure.
And maybe you create $500,000 or another million per school. Now all of a sudden baseball is relevant. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I think when you start looking at the financial side, I think you'd see more guys graduate because you could actually take a summer session course. You're going to miss less classes because some of that is going to be in the summer if you're not taking courses. Hmm. You know, one of the arguments was, well, you know, housing. Well, housing, if you look at on any college campus, the students pay through August.
Sure. Right?
And so the housing's a moot point. You're talking about meals, and if you're creating revenue, that's going to offset the meals. There's just so many positives to it.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful that we get there, you know, just hopefully sooner than later.
Time frame-wise, does that put Omaha, what, late July then, I guess?
Yeah.
You're looking like
final game
of the College World Series is July 25th, something like that?
Probably right in there. Yeah.
Okay.
It would literally be 4 weeks later.
And then for the college calendar, then you've got football camp starting – you know, August 1 and this and that. Yeah, there is a lot of sense to that. Yeah,
well, I think the other thing, too, from a, from a cost-saving standpoint, I mean, you look, we're traveling three times to warmer weather, and there's a cost associated with that. So all of a sudden you move back. Some of the southern schools are now going to have to come into our territory to play.
Sure.
And so you're going to have a cost savings from a travel standpoint. There are so many things that would help level the playing field. Once you start creating revenue, then all of a sudden, some more schools, I think, would be willing to give you some revenue share.
Plus, at a place like this where you, let's say you have a really hot basketball team that has Final Four aspirations, your fan base doesn't have to give up one for the other in terms of their attention span.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many positives.
Yeah.
I think the big thing that we're all waiting for is for commissioners and ADs to get the college football playoff, puzzle figured out. And once they get that figured out, then I think they can move on to some other things. But until they get that figured out,
yeah.
I think, both that and some other pending lawsuits with former student athletes and things. I mean, there's some things still on the table.
Sure.
If we could get that settled down, I think you'd at least have a chance for people to really sit down and study the proposal to move the season.
Yeah.
Baseball question. Bring up a sore spot, defense last year. Mm-hmm. I know you expect it to be better this year, but I look at Brett Bielema talks about run the ball, defend the run, run the ball. What is it?
Defend the run.
Stop the run and cover kicks.
And cover kicks.
Brad Underwood says, what are you going to do when the ball doesn't go in? Defend and rebound. What I've always seen in Dan Hartlib teams is we're going to be solid up the middle. Do you subscribe to the more games are lost than won kind of thing? Don't give away runs more than go just beat the other team?
So – yes. If you look in our championship year, the reason we won a championship, I mean, there were a lot of things, right? But we had three errors at short and three at second. We didn't give away games. If you look last year, we had 16 and 14 in the middle, right? So you have 30 errors up the middle. We literally gave away at least 11 games that we had won, had leads, and gave them away.
And that was a good hitting team, too.
It's a good hitting team.
A lot of power.
And so you look at my big thing is don't beat yourself. You play solid defense, pick up the ball, play catch in the chest, throw strikes, put the ball in play. People have to beat you. And my whole career, that's been kind of my philosophy. Force people to beat you. If you do everything and do the little things just, you know, solid, then people have to beat you, and it's very tough because they'll make more mistakes than you do. So, yeah, I was frustrated last year, and that was something that we talked about as a staff, and I told them when we were recruiting, like, this is what I think we need to get back to be successful. So, you know, sometimes you look at the offense. Offense is really important, but if you have a bunch of DHs, you're probably not going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Before I let you go, you good, Ella?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Before we let you go, Ella Peterson, a producer, also studying journalism and part of Big Ten Plus broadcast. She's got a couple questions.
Fire away, Ella.
All right. I think my first one is, we talked about your perspective on how important culture is to this team. Then you said you have 18 newcomers. So how do you work kind of to keep that culture when you're bringing in new people every season?
Yeah, that's a great question. And if I had the magic formula, I probably wouldn't be coaching. I'd be running around, you know, probably a billionaire because you're helping everybody else. You know, the first thing I talked about a little bit, I think you have to have good culture within your coaching staff, support staff. You have to be surrounded by the right people and have the same message so that the people, you know, that you're around trying to help are affected in a positive manner. I think the returning players have to do a really, really good job of talking about and teaching the culture and the things that are the expectations that we have. I think that's really important. And then you really have to do your homework in the portal and recruiting. You know, you want great players, but I want good people that will do the things you ask, because, you know, it's kind of like in the big leagues. You see some great players that never stick on a team, never win championships, and I think a lot of it is it's not great culture because of some of the things they don't bring to the table. I think you lay down the expectations. I think you have hardline rules. I think you help your players understand you care about them, but you don't waver from what your foundation is. And if you do those things and the returning players are on board and they teach that and hold guys accountable, your culture seems to, you know, kind of take on a life of its own. And then, as I talked about before, with our indoor facility and guys being able to spend so much time together, not only at their apartments, but then when they come to work out and they hold each other accountable, you know, it kind of breeds itself. You know, there's no exact formula. It's very, very difficult. But that's what I truly believe, you know, helps in culture situation.
Awesome. And then obviously next week we'd head down to Tampa. So outside of the warm weather, what are you most excited for, especially with this group of guys?
Well, the warm weather, although I have mixed feelings, I almost wish it was 40 degrees and windy down there, because our guys can handle that, right?
Right. You get
those
right.
Guys down there that aren't used to it. You know, I've said this for years. You hit a point where you need to go play. You need to see a different color uniform. Human nature with athletes is they think they're where they need to be, or they think that they're doing the things you want them to do. And I don't want to say they stop listening, but they stop listening.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it takes them to get hit upside the head with, I went 0-for-4, or I struck out 3 times in a row, or you know, I gave up 15 hits in 2 innings. I mean, there's some things that will go wrong. And that second week, between the first week and second week, I think that it's a great teaching time. So we just need to get started. We're playing a really, really good team. Our first 2 weekends are really tough weekends. I'm looking forward to getting out and seeing, you know, where we're at with things. The most difficult thing for me this year in my mind is not knowing our players. And when I say that, like, I know their work ethic. I know them as far as they're showing up and all the things that I said are really, really positive about them. If you ask me right now who I would pinch hit in the 9th inning with a runner on 3rd and 2 outs, I know exactly who I'd pinch hit physically. I have no idea who I'd pinch hit mentally. Mm-hmm. Because I knew who shows they can handle from a physical standpoint, but I don't know who can handle, you know, the pressures and or added pressures that they give. And so I've got to learn 18 guys in a hurry and try to make really, really good decisions based on what I've seen and what my gut is. So, I don't know. It's going to be a little bit of trial and error.
Great questions, Ella. Thank you.
That's it, Ella? Just two?
Whoa. Yeah, just two out of me.
I mean, if you got more, then I could do it.
Yeah, those got, are two solid ones. I'll send it back.
Those are good. Those are really good.
You got to go practice. Go to practice. Now, the question is this a come unglued day or not? So by the time we get this out, it'll be after practice.
Yes.
So we weren't very good with some things on Tuesday. And it was great. I was standing there talking to our young assistant, former shortstop Cal Hazier, and he asked me some really good questions about lineup and, you know, when I thought I always had a feel for lineup and how I did things. We literally stood there during some drill stuff that I wasn't involved in rather than watching. We stood there for 20 minutes and talked about that, and the drill was not very good. As far as the production that we got out of the players. And so I'm taking notes on, hey, like, I need to go push some buttons here. Dylan Napoleon jumped in, took care of that. And so I didn't have to do anything. So there were some things yesterday that weren't great. I had a calm conversation with the group afterwards. So I hope it's not a come unglued today. if it's a come unglued day, it's because – they prompted it, not because I planned it.
All right.
Do you ever need to bring your play-by-play guy in to really drive a point home?
We keep media out of all those situations. Good. One of the funniest things, and I think you were probably with us at that time, we're playing an early season game, and we had gotten beat 2 of 3, and we're in the locker room, and it was a little bit too happy for me after the way we played.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting on the bus, and everybody's on there except for some of the players, and I'm like, anybody that's not a player, off. And my wife's sitting there, and she looks at me and goes, me? I go, off. Now, I didn't get a very good look back, but she got off.
If his wife's not even allowed.
Yes.
I got reprimanded on that one.
I hear you.
As I like to say, because you mentioned culture, a lot of time together, see you more than you want real soon.
It's here. It's here. I'm ready to go. Excited about it, and you know, looking forward to, you know, the and this is a positive thing. The grind of the season.
Yeah.
You get into it, and you know, it's go time. So
I'm nothing excited. Like baseball in that way. That's one to me. One of the reasons I love the sport. Yesterday is over. Another game today. Let's go.
Yep.
Unlike this guy likes the game, but we could talk about it for weeks. Yes. What just happened in this last game? When
football games are every 7 days. That's sick day to overanalyze everything.
Yeah, so. 6 days, and they're playing in good weather and all that
right.
stuff.
That's right.
Thanks a lot, Dan.
No, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Dan Hartlett with us here on Light the Eye. We'll be right back. I really enjoyed the conversation with Dan Hartlett. Part of that is because I have a regular conversation with him in season that's...
Dozens of conversations with him in season,
about
right?
50 of them.
Yes.
Before and after every game. And before, it's about 3 to 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little bit... It's not the same conversation you get to have here in a sit-down setting.
Yes.
Got
yes.
things to do. And it's, you know, the radio constraints and all that. So we get to get in a little bit more of life and philosophy. And one of the things that people don't know all the time about Dan Hartlett is he's one of these coaches who's rooted himself in Champ. I mean, he's lived here 35-plus years.
Mm-hmm.
Raised his kids here. And, you know, he and Gina are really part of the community, and that's a neat thing to see when coaches get ingrained in a community beyond just I'm with the sport I coach, but my life is here, my friends are here, and he's done a lot. He and his family have done a lot that way.
Yeah, and he really sold me there on the, you know, if Big Ten baseball was running into June, maybe it does feel a little bit like minor league baseball. Like, you know, it makes me think if there's a weekend series against Indiana June 10th leading up to the Big Ten tournament, which is the end of June, I like that idea.
Have you been out in May?
Yes. Yes.
I'm packed just already.
Yes. I'm just saying, like, extending that into June, into that summer feel in Champaign of going to a baseball game, I really, really like that idea. So he sold me on that. I am now evangelized. I am ready to go spread the gospel of move the season back, because that sounded pretty exciting to me.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things in college baseball that if they would just, that everyone kind of knows what the common sense thing is that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever has prevented it, bureaucracy, the nature of college, you know, the system of college athletics prevents that. And look, we know the world revolves around college football first and then college basketball. I understand that. But if we can start getting to some more common sense things in college baseball, it's a great sport.
And the College World Series has really grown. Like, it's been so gripping of late that it grabs the attention of more than just the standard college baseball fan. Like, it's become a June institution. So, yeah.
I wonder if it resonated with you when he said, you know, sometimes athletes need to go see another jersey that they're not. They think they're in a place where they're ready, and the only thing that's going to teach them from there is competition. I wonder if it felt like somebody who just says, hey, I can go jump 10 feet in a long jump, and they need to go out there and experience that.
I got
maybe some humility.
Three or two more no ways this week. My son and daughter-in-law, I told them the story. They both said no chance. So, look, the doubters are heavy.
That's bulletin board material
for you. The doubters are out there, and I think it's time for me to prove everyone wrong. I mean, not right now. It's too cold. It's snowy. We got to find a sand pit for me to land in and twist my ankle. But I'm going to prove the doubters wrong.
All right. Until then, enjoy the weekend of Illini sports. Don't forget the Pink Out sellout game for Illinois women's basketball on Sunday. It's a noon tip central time. They're getting close to the sellout. And our very own producer, Ella Peterson, will be on the broadcast, too. So best of luck there. But they're trying to do something haven't done in a while. Sell out the State Farm Center for a women's game. And, of course, the men the night before at Michigan State. Should be a very compelling weekend. And then we will talk to you after that to break it all down. Thank you, Ella Peterson. Thanks to our guest, Dan Hartlip, for Robin Rosenthal. I'm Scott Beatty. We'll talk to you again. I guess you get to... Press the button again,
press
Robert.
Press the button.
Next time.
My precious. What's it gonna take, baby?